The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money. Managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me today are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Stephen Lucan. And today we're talking about a topic that's an ominous one and something that I think you guys probably are exposed more to than you'd like to be, you know, and that is getting rich quick, sort of that attitude. It's not a literal sense. It's a, hey, I've got a great idea for a business. What do you think of it? So I want to get into how the marketing kind of misleads people and gets them emotionally ramped up. I want to talk about the emotion, the sort of personality behind it, and then some of the different aspects of getting rich quick and how they're kind of perilous. So getting into it.
Sounds good.
Yeah. How do you, if you've got somebody coming into you to talk to you about a new business or an opportunity, and again, we'll get into sort of a laundry list of those things, but I really want to know, how do you rein them in when they're so ramped up and excited? What's the psychology behind that? Is there a personality, first, I guess is the question, is there a particular personality that kind of goes with that get-rich-quick mindset?
Yeah, it's that shortcut to financial wealth or financial independence, and there really is no shortcuts. But if you're talking about a new idea or a new venture or a new opportunity, you have to weigh, okay, what will this change? How will this change impact your financial plan? And you go through just a laundry list of how will it impact your taxes? How will it impact your general life with your family, your retirement projection? What if everyone always talks about what if it goes right, but what if it goes wrong? So you have to do that contingency and just look at it from, take a step back and look at it from a 10,000 foot view on how it will impact the financial plan. Financial planning is fluid, so things change and these opportunities will always come up, but you have to weigh the risk and reward behind it.
Yeah, I think the first question we typically ask is, how did you hear about this?
Sure, yeah.
It's all about the people. So that's a great question to start with, and even ask yourself that. You know, why is this person pitching this idea to me? Why me? If it was so good.
Why am I so lucky?
Yeah, exactly, right? If it's so good,
point.
Why am I
and
getting
it,
the opportunity?
Actually, I didn't even think of that as a component to it. Mm-hmm. So they kind of see it on your forehead that you might be a little bit more of a person to lean into it than somebody else.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's usually centered around money. So people, these high risk, and I'll say high risk because maybe it does one of 1%, the 1% of the 1% hit, but that they look for money. So it's opportunity. But if it was so good, as Tyler said, if it was so good, you probably wouldn't be offered the opportunity. Because it would be gone. It wouldn't be even offered because the people who, the wealthiest of the wealthiest, they take all these ideas and they keep them. They don't offer them to the little guys like myself, right? So you got to ask that question that Tyler said, what made me so fortunate for this?
Yeah, and the second question to that is, well, it's more of a saying that I'm sure you've heard, and it applies to finance and in particular these deals, is if it's too good to be true, it probably is.
Mm-hmm.
That applies to so many things in life, but when you see these types of deals to your theme of getting rich quick, as you said, Stephen, there's no such thing to doing that. And even when these business deals hit, somebody's probably put 15, 20, 30 years of work in to actually have a transaction to sell their business where they do get that once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. But that's not quick, right? The transaction's quick. You get your money quick, but it was, you know, decades of work.
And some of these people are really good at sales.
Oh, yeah.
They will not take no for an answer. And there's one industry in particular that comes to my mind that we can get into a little bit later. But so the marketing manipulation and bypassing that is really all about your own strength and research, right?
Yeah.
Your own personality. That's where it starts.
So and Tyler mentioned it too. It's the person who is making the deal in play. That's who you're investing. You're not investing in the idea. It's the person behind it. and what's their track record? How do you know them? How many deals have they done in the past and so forth? So that's really where you have to start with, is who's behind this opportunity that is being presented to you.
That's a great point. I wish I had known that. I can remember taking care of my dad, and this person that actually came to me through the nursing home off of a brochure that was displayed availed himself as though he was a VA rep. So I thought he was with the VA, and I did no research, which is not like me ever. I just can't, to this day, I can't believe I didn't sort of try to look him up.
A little vetting,
I just trusted the whole process. And he and his wife showed up at my house to kind of go through my dad's benefits and what we needed to do. He had to go into nursing care. And it was a very short time in that meeting with him and his wife. There was just my sixth sense kind of came alive.
Spidey senses.
My husband and I were sitting there with this couple, and they were very nice, you know, very polished, super intelligent. And I remember thinking, something is not right about him, and I cannot put my finger on it. And it wasn't until after that he wanted me to open an annuity.
Mm.
I didn't know any. This was before I worked here. I didn't know anything about that. And I thought he had my dad's best interest in mind. I trusted him, which is, again, not my nature. I tend not to trust anybody. So I signed the papers. It was just such an emotional situation. And, you know, when you're going through, especially that particular.
You're vulnerable.
Yeah, I was. Yep. He knew that.
Yep.
It wasn't until days later, 3-4 days later, I started looking for him. I Googled him and was trying to find him. I learned that he was actually an investment advisor that worked for an annuity company. And he had these brochures printed that looked like veteran representation.
Mm-hmm.
I was on the phone immediately. You know, it was a nightmare. I ended up getting the money back. I threatened him, legal action. I called Stiver's office. I got Stiver's involved. I got the lobbyists for nursing homes involved.
Good.
So he's nowhere to be found now. I don't know if they got him. They asked me if I would go to court for it. I said, yes, I would. Yeah. But it was about 6 or 8 months of absolute misery. So, boy, do your research and realize if I had met this guy on the street at a party or something, I would have been, he's not my cup of tea. There's something about him I didn't like, and I should have just trusted that instinct.
Yeah, and again, it could have been the right thing, but if you're not, whatever the decision is, if you're never comfortable with it, you shouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's buying an object, a car, a house, whatever. Mm-hmm. If you have hesitation or reservations behind it, don't do it.
Well, especially
it could
finances.
Be the, it could be the right. It could be the right thing that's being presented. But again, if you're not comfortable with it, you shouldn't be doing
it. Well, don't go in it like I did, not informed and completely trusting the individual with everything without doing your due diligence and doing research. That's the moral of the story.
There you go.
So there's marketing. There's character and integrity in that salesperson. And the way they approached it. So spot on, great point. Wish I had known that. Sort of specifically, let's talk about some of the marketing tactics. I've done a little bit of research. I done a little research on this subject.
Yeah.
I want to talk about how marketing tactics play on people's fear and greed to override rational thinking.
Yeah, again, sticking with the theme of getting rich quick, it's all about return. And how quickly you can get that return. So, we always talk about the concept of enough. So in your financial plan, it's about achieving enough. It's not about the rate of return. But these deals are all marketed with the return, I think, right in front of you, right?
More and more.
All the glossy slides you look at, those pro formas, everything looks fantastic. Rarely do we see an analysis or a projection of a deal that shows, some down periods. But occasionally we'll get, a base case and a worst case best case scenario, but the point being is it's all about return. And so that's what I think people get stuck in, and that goes back to people's greed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think there's a lot of factors that go into that, but emotions is a big piece to it, especially if you've maybe been down on your luck, had some tough job issues and changing jobs, and you're looking way to climb back up, trying to take shortcuts, like you said.
Yeah.
And it's all about that return. So you got to dig in deep, because we'll get some stories here recently that have happened, but I think back to Bernie Madoff, right, the whole Ponzi scheme. The fact that was, 15 years ago now?
Wow, roughly, could be more. Yeah, it could have been more, but yes.
And people are still doing it. Yeah. And it's just a matter of until they get caught, and there's a lot of victims in between.
And I think people become vulnerable when they miss opportunities, right? So you hear about it, and I'll just pick one, NVIDIA, right? People all of a sudden the hot stock in the last couple of years where, oh, I was looking at it, I didn't buy it, and I should have, and it would, if I invested $10,000, I would be worth this. Now. So it's that swing and a miss, or that missed opportunity you didn't take. Those are being marketed all the time. You see it on just the everyday TV, right? CNBC will be posting, or Fox Business, whatever it is. They always show the returns over the last 5 years. If you invested this, it'd be worth this today. So that also messes with people's minds to say, if I would have done that, I was that close and I didn't do it, they look at, oh, the next one will be mine, right? So that plays on people's emotions as well.
Yeah, as the kids say, that's the FOMO, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Fear of missing out, right? That's exactly what it is. That's a great point.
My mom used to tell a story. My parents were divorced, and my mom used to tell a story. She had three small children to raise, and that was before there was child support and alimony. That was back in the old days. She tells a story how she went to the grocery store with her last $50, and there was a guy with a card table set up in outside. Set up outside the grocery store from a company called Wendy's.
Selling stock. I thought you were going to say a shell game.
No, right. He was selling company stock for $5 a share. Okay.
Was it Dave Thomas out there?
I don't know if it was Dave Thomas.
Could have been.
It would have been in the early 70s,
sure.
So it's quite possible.
Yeah, that was right in the wheelhouse.
And she thought, she stopped, and he had her. He engaged her.
Yeah.
And she thought about it, and she just cussed every time.
What could have been? Right, what could have been?
Once Wendy started becoming really big, she just said, oh, I had my ship came in, and it went out. Right.
That's
I said,
yourself.
You did the smart thing.
Yeah, for every one of those, there's thousands that don't hit.
Right, exactly. Yeah,
that was more of a funny, it wasn't meant to be, right?
But she thought about it over and over again, right? So it's the same thing applies to people with that mindset. Yeah.
Do you think that these folks tap into the younger generations a little harder because of their emotional vulnerability about money?
I don't think it's necessarily generation based. It's everybody. Yeah, everybody's got emotions,
really?
Right? And different
I would have thought that the younger people.
Yeah, it's all socioeconomic. Easier targets. Depending on your social group, right? Whether it's how you're, what social class you're in, right? They're all different. Vulnerabilities that is being presented to you. So it's not the generational, but I would say the social aspect.
That's interesting to me because of the social media.
Yeah, exactly. For the younger generations, it's TikTok, it's Instagram, it's all those things. Mm-hmm. And we've done some shows about that part of just, you know, being careful what you read, but certainly there's a lot of get-rich-quick schemes on social media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the GameStop's a good one, right? The GameStop guy.
AMC
right?
And all
exactly.
In fact, a quick story.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple.
Yeah, no, recently there was a group of dentists that figured out they were part of a giant Ponzi scheme, found out the hard way, but there was a former dentist who started a real estate investment group that heavily marketed to dentists. Shocker, right?
Social group.
Yeah, exactly. Your circle, right? And this is just breaking this past month. And the whole scheme was he would teach you how to make money in real estate after you pay and commit to paying $120,000 within the first 18 months of getting started. Then you got your investor badge.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh, yeah, right?
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Status. Yeah.
Yep. And then they introduce you to a group of, air quotes here, trusted advisors that have real estate investments to sell. Long story short, it's a giant Ponzi scheme, but they were issuing what they called notes, or not to get too technical, but basically a piece of paper that says, okay, here's what we're going to pay you. No vetting of behind what was actually going on as far as the actual investing itself, and they were going to get 12%. Well, 12% is pretty good. And again, there you go. There's the rate of return piece. So it's your circle. It's the greed piece. It's the return right in front of your face. But the gig's up, right? They got caught. And now this most recently, the guy who ran this thing, he left with an estimated $27 million with them. And they're trying to find him.
Mm. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
$27 million he took it from these people.
Check the docks down at the Caribbean.
Yeah.
Got his boat and good riddance.
That's unbelievable.
But that's another good example of the class you're with, right? So dentists. The dentists go to a lot of conventions. They're a part of that network, that closed network. And they share ideas, right? And they're always, oh, I got this, or I got this from my guy, it spreads like wildfire.
And there's an automatic trust factor because it's
to
another dentist.
Yes, yeah,
like
to
a psychological
degree, right.
Game. You're a dentist, I'm a dentist.
The same
if it's
club,
good for you,
yeah,
it must work for me too.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. So that's how it works. And they just get in, and then it just spreads like wildfire. Just takes one.
Well, and that's how this deal went, too. They used Facebook, a Facebook group, dentists, real estate investors. I forget the name of the exact group, but that's how he was marketing it. And it's, oh, check this out, check this out. And so that's the whole issue. Just like you said, it just starts snowballing out of control.
This is not in any way a comparable, but I don't know why my brain goes to Firefest. I mean, all the investors that lost millions, maybe billions on that event. So, mm-hmm. I mean, do your research. Where would you begin, though? Where would you?
Well, that's starts with the people, right?
And if you don't know, don't do it.
So look up the person first.
I asked a friend of my parents who's a big investor, and I asked him about crypto a few years ago, and he said, if I don't understand it, I don't buy it. I was like, that's a great answer, right? Yep. He didn't understand it, so good luck to all those involved, but I'm out.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's a great segue, because I wanted to kind of examine some of the popular shortcuts to wealth that people take. I have a sort of running list. I want to go through an example of it, and then how do you suggest we help people align their thinking about it? Some of these might be a little offbeat, but so day trading and speculative investments. You guys talk a lot about the whole day trading thing.
Sure.
How important it is not to, you know, check that mindset at the door when you're trying to formulate a long-term financial plan.
Yeah, it's a 50-50 shot,
Steven's
right?
So laughing.
All the stats will show it. If you're in the market for a day, stock market for a day, you got a 50-50 chance of making money, right? So, I mean, so you're literally gambling at that point. So the day traders, you know, they've got 10 monitors around them, driving themselves crazy, looking at all those things. Again, you'll hear about the one stock that they picked that hit, and you won't hear about the 100 that missed. And so it's a gamble in that sense. But there's people that are good at it. I think at some point your luck runs out, though, because that's really what it is.
Yeah.
So from an investing standpoint, it's not something that we would ever recommend anybody gets into. But there are scenarios where people have fun with it. But mm-hmm. I get concerned then, too, because accessibility is easier than ever with all the apps. And you can do it. You know, I just picture a dentist right now on the chair cleaning teeth or mm-hmm. you're trading on
right,
the phone.
Right, exactly.
So it can be distracting from the overall financial plan. But again, as a strategy too, I think it's you're hearing about all the good ones, but you don't hear about the ones that missed.
Yeah. And you mentioned the penny stock. So again, I hate this because you ask the question to somebody and they're like, yeah, because they don't think it'll happen to them. But the question is, if you're willing to lose it, it's okay. So I've got $1,000, $10,000, $100, whatever you want to put into this speculative opportunity. And speculative is a broad range from penny stocks to a type of business to just a blind investment. They always say, yes, I'm willing to lose until it happens.
Right.
And then you see the frustrations. And it's you can never say, I told you so, but I told you so, right? You shouldn't do this if you're not willing to lose it. And that's what most people are, they're willing to say yes, because they don't see the loss. They only see that.
It's a gambling mindset.
That thousandfold return. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure.
It is. It's 100% gambling.
It was even ramped up further during COVID, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's because people couldn't gamble on sports.
You look There's at no like, sports.
They were, right. yeah, people, so yeah. they turned to other things to get their fix. I mean, that really happened.
Yeah. And then with penny stocks, you know, the pump and dump is a classic. And this happened in the real stock market that started in the 1920s in the crash is the pump and dump, where basically people go into a undervalued stock or a cheap stock, and then they buy their shares. And it happened a few years ago with a coffee company that was like some Bob Marley family coffee company, right? So everyone knows Bob Marley. Like, oh, okay, this is good. And a bunch of people went in and invested in it. It was dirt cheap penny stock. Pennies, and they buy thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of shares, and then they start marketing. This is the next greatest coffee out there. Bob Marley's family owns the coffee. I forget the background to it. And then it gets elevated because all the people who are following, they go in, and now they're buying it 4, 5, 6 cents a share. It goes up to a dollar a share. Guess who's the first one out? The people who are promoting it. They sell. Stock plummets. They got their money. That's the pump and dump.
It's happened
right?
many
so,
times, yeah.
Yeah, it happens all day. It's illegal, but how do you prove it?
Is that even legal?
No, it is not. But if you go back in the history of the stock market, it happened on Wall Street in the 1920s before the crash, too. So it happens, and then the technicalities of the legality behind it depends on the circumstances, but that's real.
But is it, from my perspective, isn't it, and this might be in a whole other show, so stop me if it's not something you want to get into, isn't the stock market kind of that type of game anyway? I mean, you're
sure,
buying,
but you're investing on earnings, you're investing on revenue, you're investing on a company.
But isn't that the role of the investors is to know when to sell it all? Mm-hmm. And whether you're at the bottom, middle, or high end of
that's the diversification, right? That's okay. Why you broadly okay. you diversify your not putting it all in one company.
Got it.
There's too much risk involved, and there's numerous dozens and dozens of examples of good Boeing's a classic here in the last 5 years. Great company, one of the greatest companies in the history of this country, and they have problems right mm-hmm. now. They had problems, and hopefully they're getting out of them. But the stock took a hit. Mm-hmm. So that's, again, that's the investing concept. You got to diversify. We're talking about speculation mm-hmm. here.
This is where the professional comes yeah. in. I mean, yep. this is what you guys do every day. It's really important to get help. Don't be naive enough to think that you can handle the universe by yourself without the
right.
professional. High-risk, high-reward investments. So what are the key indicators of a high-risk investment that it's not worth pursuing? And how do people sort of adjust their mindset and their strategies around it?
Yeah, that goes back to the if it's too good to be true, it probably is mm-hmm. type thing. So if you're looking at something and saying, okay, I'll get 50% back in a week or something, something very outlandish that you wouldn't see otherwise. But that applies to everything, right? So it's generally speaking, like if you're in stocks versus bonds, stocks are riskier. So there is a higher reward that comes with that over time versus bonds. But again, in the get rich world, it's all about people look at the historical returns, and I even see people do this even in their 401ks.
The pro forma.
Yeah, well,
right?
Yeah, well, yeah. right. yeah. So they look back. If you're talking about a stock, they're looking at historical things. But the pro forma, to your point, Stephen, right. that's all what could happen. That's the speculative
investment.
Side. Yeah. And if you see a pro forma where it's got columns of year by year of returns, and it just keeps going up and up, and it's like compound interest, and your 10 grand's now worth, 100 million. Okay, it's probably not where you're going to be, right? That's not how it's going to work out. I always use the story of COVID, too. Nobody had COVID in any pro forma that I saw, a global pandemic. Mm-hmm. Right? If you look at that deals back in 2019, nobody had global pandemic in 2020 as part of their forecast for their returns. So same thing you're seeing that now in commercial real estate. It's really starting to see the other side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a deal the other day where it went to zero. It's basically completely bankrupt, and it's a big deal, commercial buildings.
Yeah.
So there's risk involved, but the high reward does come with that return, but it's – again, the 1 out of 100.
Yeah, or 1,000.
Or 1,000.
Yeah.
Sidebar, I'm sitting here remembering a day when the local newspaper had all of the stocks and people were actually running their projections and their interests through the newspaper. Can you imagine, were you ever pre-technology?
Sure.
Did you guys do this?
No, in my younger days, the Wall Street Journal.
Can you imagine the layers, what those guys had to go through?
It's funny, as soon as they look at it, it's dated information.
Exactly.
And print, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Fortune 500 companies. We're talking the speculation side, too, though.
Yeah.
You have time. It's not, you don't need it by the second. If you're investing for the long term, a day is a blip on the radar.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right. Real estate flipping. This is a big one. Lots
yeah.
of the,
yeah.
Lots of people wanting to or seeing this, I personally experiencing these big companies are going in and just overhauling old neighborhoods and updating them and buying mm-hmm. homes in bulk and flipping them.
There's some good in there.
So, there's some good, good opportunity there, but what do you have to look for before you decide to start doing that? Let's tell people how to align their thinking.
Well, yeah, it's a business.
I have some opinions.
Right. So, you've become a business. Okay, great. You want to flip a house. Okay, what did you study? What did you learn? What kind of research? How are you going to do it? Who's going to be your contractors? You need an architect. What about zoning? And you have to have knowledge.
Right.
So, no, I would, that's something I know. Again, if I don't understand it, I don't do it. That is outside of me. I would never do something like that. Now, would I buy an old house and fix it up myself? Maybe mm-hmm. with the help of my brother, who's a little bit more talented than I am with that kind of stuff. But no, to do it as a business venture, I know a lot of people who do it successfully, but that's their business.
Right.
That's their world. And they've made mistakes. They've learned from mistakes. It didn't destroy them. But again, you when you go into a project or a business like that, you're going to make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's your business and you got to work through it.
There's so many TV shows,
yeah.
so much social media about this particular get rich quick scheme. You have to know the industry. You have to understand the whole world of subcontracting. You have to understand zoning. You have to understand the landscape, the topography of the earth. Mm-hmm. I mean, before you decide to put something, you live in Columbus and you want to flip houses in Florida, you know, that's sand and clay, sure. And it's a lot very different, right?
Yeah.
Did you want to say something?
No. That's one we hear a lot about as far as where the return is right in front. It's because here's the historical return on this property.
Yeah.
I could do that too. Steven said it too. We have a lot of people that we've seen do it very successfully and some that haven't. And I think it's, if you have a good track record, your mindset should be you are now, as you said, a business owner. Treat it like a business. Mm-hmm. And that's different than trying to get rich quick. Mm-hmm. So there's a line there.
Right. If you're a dentist, you do dental work, mm-hmm. right? You're not flipping houses. Right. If you're in real estate and a contractor, flip houses. That's good. Your talent, that's your area of specialty.
Right. Cryptocurrency, to me, it's of a game. You guys know about that universe. I do not understand any of it, how it works. So let's explain to people, because there's so much social media play about this topic, and you're either on one side of the fence or you're on the other. So let's explain to people what it is and how they should align their thinking about it.
Well, the one everybody thinks of is Bitcoin, but there's a lot of different types of cryptocurrencies that are out there. I actually think at some point in the future, it'll probably become part of a asset allocation of a portfolio, right, mm-hmm. within the currency yep. stuff and money markets and so forth. So not all of them are bad by any means. That's not the take. But the reason people get into it is definitely greed-driven. Same questions we got years ago about gold, mm-hmm. and it's the same answer. There's no, to your point, Stephen, a balance sheet. There's no earnings. There's nothing to look at. So the price of the cryptocurrency, the price of any precious metal, that's all speculative based upon what people are feeling and emotions behind that. So there's no...
So is there somebody sitting behind a computer manually running the numbers? I mean, how does that even work?
Supply and demand, price
right.
curve.
There's definitely a market. At one point, the number one owner of Bitcoin was like 25-year-old South Koreans. And second largest was the FBI.
Wow.
And they seize that stuff in raids, right? So there's a lot of crypto. You can do a whole show on crypto, but definitely marketed towards making your money quick. But you can also, as we've seen, go up and down. It's not just a straight line up.
It's the new penny stock.
Yeah, well, right.
Yeah. Penny stocks were very popular in the 90s, okay. and right? So now crypto.
My brain understands
it's
that.
It's these unknown cryptos that are becoming, the pump and dump. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to happen. It's going to be out there, and that's it.
Well, you saw with all the celebrities a couple of years ago. Remember the Super Bowl?
Tom Brady and Kim Kardashian,
all of them were marketing it. And then they got,
Crypto.com.
Yeah, I think that was one of those.
Yeah.
And they got absolutely clobbered. And they got sued by the SEC for misleading statements and all sorts of different things.
Wow.
So they had to pay millions in fines.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Yeah, don't we lose your password either, right?
Yeah, if you lose that, you're done.
I remember some horror stories back here mm-hmm. of people who couldn't remember their password.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Could be.
Yeah, it's very unique key that is tied to that. And if you don't have it, it's gone.
Okay. One more.
All right.
One more good one. And that's the timeshare.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the
timeshares?
Timeshares.
Ah,
buying timeshares.
Okay.
I know it can work, but
right.
I never hear an example.
Well, it's not an investment.
Okay.
Right. So if we're talking investment, one, it's not an investment. It's a use.
Some people think it is.
It's a use of a property.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, that's how it's pitched, right?
So right.
Talking earlier about with your family, right? With your dad and getting sold an annuity, I immediately thought timeshares. It's mm-hmm. the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions. You're there on vacation, having a wonderful time.
Yeah.
Hey,
you just got off the helicopter ride, right?
Yeah.
Looking at the lava
let me show you,
flow.
Limited time only, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's what they do. They prey on the emotions. This one is a positive emotion, right? You're having a great time with the family. Let's do it again. So I think so many times, and I think maybe you agree with this, but people that we've seen have those, they think they're going to use them and go back, and they don't.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Family dynamics change.
They
kids
can't
get older.
Rid of them.
Right, the Disney ones,
so,
right?
Quick story. Family members passed away a couple of years ago, an aunt and uncle, and they had a timeshare in Cancun, and I'm now working with my cousin to get through this, but they are, the timeshare company is still trying to come after the estate for fees.
Right.
And there's a little known secret that if you just don't pay it, it kind of just goes away. But the timeshare companies are making it look like the estate is on the hook to pay this now.
Ooh.
And it's very, very, I'm just going to say it, shady.
Yeah,
there's shady policies
fine print, and
definitely in the fine print, but it's not even there. It's just, there's no clarity or transparency on what the options are because the estate or the person in charge of the estate calls the timeshare company to figure out what's going on. Sorry, we can't speak with you. Well, who are you going to speak with? Mm-hmm. The owners are passed on. So it's a mess. So timeshares, be careful what you're getting into.
Yeah. Get a hotel.
Yeah. I say that, but also to share the good side. I've seen some situations, too, where there's a Disney timeshare, I think, of one example, and the grandparents take the grandkids every single year. They've done it for like 15 years now. But at some point, they're going to get a little older.
Yes.
Maybe it stays in the family
to
go to the next generation.
Right.
But it can work out.
If you use it, it's probably a good thing.
Yeah.
And if you don't use it, no, it's a waste of money.
And they're
but
different.
It's not an
Are they all the same? I've got a friend who has a timeshare, and she earns points that she can spend in other locations.
Right, the points.
So the actual freestanding
it's a catalog of locations, destinations.
Are they all like that?
It's going that way. I know there's Hilton, Marriott. There's all different kinds, and they're consolidating. A lot of the hotel companies are in it because they have that knowledge of facilities and buildings and hotels and so forth. So, yeah, it's there. But, again, it can be a good thing. It just depends how you use it. And you have to use it. If you're not using it, it becomes a burden.
Yeah.
And trying to get out of it's the hard part.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. Wow. All right, let's talk about some financial planning takeaways to protect yourself. I've got a list. Diversify your investments. I'm going to let you take what does that entail?
Well, it's, as Steven said, just don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't get caught up in the greed side of what one particular company or stock's done, and realize that the core to your plan should be diversifying. You can add in those other pieces later, whether it's starting a business or the real estate things we talked about, but don't lose sight of the core, which should be sound asset allocation and diversification.
Okay. Stephen, conduct thorough research. We beat this one to death, but a couple of bullet points.
Yeah, if you're pitched with something that's specific or unique or small and speculative, you got to do your research and understand what you're getting into. Start with the person presenting the idea, who's backing that individual, track record, and again, just be a cynic. And if this deal is so good, why me?
Mm-hmm.
Why did I get this opportunity? And most of the time, you realize there's the only thing missing from a bad opportunity is someone else's money. No one put their own money in it.
That's a great quote.
Right? Yeah.
We need to put that one on the wall.
Right,
all right, Tyler, create a long-term financial plan. This is what we eat, sleep, and breathe every day. So what's that entail?
Yeah, that's kind of plan your work your plan, right? So it's one of those things that it's ongoing. It's never stopping. You can get distracted by these get-rich-quick ideas along the way. But you got to reset to the bigger picture and the goals. And that's why we think, meeting regularly and at least quarterly, touching base on where you're at and your progress is key, because then you can kind of start to see patterns develop and it keeps your eye on the ball. Right? You don't get sidetracked with these get rich ideas.
Play the long game. Right.
And set realistic expectations.
Yeah.
Everybody thinks they're setting realistic expectations, but are they really?
If they're working with a good financial planner, you reel them into the realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I would like to have a house in Europe and in Australia, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things I want.
Australia has big spiders, Stephen.
I had somebody tell me, they said, you don't realize how valuable it is when you tell me no, working for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's again, to what you said, you got to have some realistic guardrails.
Yeah. No,
and sometimes they just need to hear it from somebody else. They know it. They know they probably shouldn't do it, but hearing us tell them that, it actually gives them peace of mind.
Yeah.
There was a few years ago, again, a client could afford to lose it, and we went through that conversation. Speculative investment in the future of EV batteries, right? It's going to be the next greatest thing. And I heard it from someone in his circle, so he wanted to invest money into it. He got it went belly up, right? And he was so distraught. Again, you're willing to lose it, yes, but he wasn't, because of the way he was behaving on the loss. He was just sour, right? And again, it's money, right? So then another opportunity came about, and he wanted to do it again about a year later. And I said, do you remember our conversation on how salty and bitter you were? And he's quiet. I said, you were so distraught. And I said, I didn't want to talk to you. That's how cranky you were. And I said, why are we going to repeat the same thing again?
Yeah.
And he said, thank you. And he decided
helping people become self-aware is part of what you do.
Right.
That's great.
Exactly.
This has been awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate your time. We hope you'll come in and catch us on the next podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a one-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.